Sponsorship of the KQED live audio stream comes from Xfinity Mobile, featuring customized wireless plans. Customers can choose unlimited, buy the gig, shared data, or a mix of both and switch it up anytime. Learn more at xfinitymobile.com.
Thank you for all of the candidates for coming. Thank you to Comcast, Hometown Network, Channel 104. Thank you to our moderator, Phil Matier of the San Francisco Chronicle, renowned Bay Area journalist of over 20 years. Please join me in welcoming Phil Matier.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Well, good evening, audience and candidates. It's going to be, I hope, an interesting evening. You know, I was watching the candidates come in, and I was watching the audience come in, and I want to thank the audience, all you members out there. I think at least three-quarters of you have called me over the course of the years with tips on various skullduggeries going on in and around city and state government. I want to thank you for those tips, and I want to thank the 11 assembled here for taking the calls that I had to make after those tips and answer the tough questions. You know, they say that running for mayor or being mayor of San Francisco is kind of a ride on a roller coaster, the likes of which you don't see in any other city besides New York, Boston, and maybe Chicago. It is a ride on a roller coaster, and it's a roller coaster that chances are might go off the tracks halfway through. The guy in front of you is going to lose his cotton candy, and it's going to smack you in the face. And by the time you're going over the big hump, you're going to find out the power's gone. It's not an easy job. It's a job of great plans, of great tracks, and great uncertainties. And a lot of it has to do with where you stand on positions, but also how you handle things that just come flying through the door. And that's why we're going to have some fun tonight, because you're going to answer questions from each other, which might be the equivalent of the cotton candy coming, or the best roller coaster tracks up and down through the economy, public safety, and other issues. What we're going to do is basically round one of our format is going to be going to have a little introduction to the candidates, then we're going to reach into the punch bowl here and ask some questions, and then they're going to ask each other questions, and then we're going to have another round of questions from the punch bowl. It's all very random. The questions have sort of been collected from various people around the community and organizations, and I think the candidates here will do a great job of answering them all. So, why don't we get started with some introductions. First of all, former Supervisor Mikhail Alioto-Peer. She cites her work in neighborhood schools, wants for better public education, and she wants to attract innovative companies to San Francisco and create family support jobs. Okay? And she also wants to expand home ownership opportunities. Mikhail Alioto-Peer, welcome. Welcome. Right there. Next up, Supervisor John Avalos. He says as mayor, he's going to strengthen and diversify our local economy with more blue-collar and green-collar jobs. He's going to work towards a stronger partnership between communities. We'll also partner with the school district, SF State, and City College to make sure that our youth have the best educational opportunities and are well prepared for the jobs of tomorrow. Supervisor John Avalos. Next up, we have on our list here is Board of Supervisors President David Chu. First and foremost, he says we must build our economy and create jobs for our residents. Second, we must make sure that the city government is working smarter and better for the people it serves. And third, we must ensure that San Francisco offers its young people a world-class education. Former Supervisor Bevin Dufty. He believes in fixing the big picture means taking care of the basics. And as mayor, Bevin said he will be focused on creating schools for the families of today and workers for tomorrow. And he will tap into our excellent brain trust to accomplish those goals. Next up, we have retired city administrator and former SF supervisor, Tony Hall, who is going to be calling for stronger pension reform. He's also going to call for job creation, and he wants zero-based budgeting and stringent audits. City Attorney Dennis Herrera, he'd like to think of himself as being an independent leader at City Hall, and he's done more than anyone, in his opinion, in this race to take on the powerful interest and protect San Franciscans. Dennis has put forward a comprehensive plan to create jobs, and I'm sure he will be talking about that tonight. Entrepreneur and educator Joanna Reese. It's the red thing. No, we've got that down. It's just the red thing and the alphabet. I'm bad with that. She has a record of creating jobs, building stronger schools, and doing more with limited resources than anyone thought possible. She knows we can stop the cycle of budget deficits and that cut vital services, and that she knows that there needs to be a way to stop the residents that are leaving our community for better jobs and better schools by bringing the entrepreneurial spirit to city government. San Francisco Assessor Phil Tang, actually Assessor Recorder. As mayor, Phil will have a strong commitment to creating families, sustaining jobs, making Muni more reliable and efficient, and making government more responsive, and most of all, more effective. And we also have our late entry city public defender, Jeff Adachi, whose goals are to restore integrity and fiscal integrity to City Hall, create jobs, safe and clean streets, and effective and honest government. An impressive lineup and impressive goals. So, what? Leland, wait a minute. Absolutely, penalty points. And Ed Lee. I love this stuff. Live TV, it doesn't get any better. Okay, State Senator Leland Yee. Three of his goals in San Francisco will be to get as close to 100% renewable energy in San Francisco as possible by 2020, to ensure that CPMC Hospital rebuild is supported by labor, community, and healthcare providers, and he wants an ethics commission that will no longer be appointed by politicians, but instead will be appointed by citizens. And Mayor Ed Lee, his goals and objectives include creating and retaining high-paying jobs, changing the tone at City Hall so that San Franciscans have a voice, and ensuring the economic stability of San Francisco and our region. I think we got him, all right? Now, do we want to go to the questions? Yes. So, let's reach into the punch bowl and see what we've got. First up, for Dennis Herrera. All right, do you support extending parking meter hours past 6 p.m. and extending enforcement on Sundays?
I do not. And I do not because I think if you look at all the burdens that we have on small business owners, one of the things they complain about most is extending parking meters. And when you're paying $4.50 an hour, $5 an hour for a parking meter out in West Portal or another small business corridor, your business oftentimes leaves and goes to South City or Daly City instead of staying right here in San Francisco. I do not think that we should be nickel and diamond residents any more than we already have. And the fact of the matter is that why we are doing things like that is because we haven't had a realistic discussion in this city about what role government should play in people's lives and what people are willing to pay for. So we overlayer them with parking meter rates and fees to nickel and dime left and right, and I don't think that's the way to enhance that discussion. It also disproportionately impacts lower and moderate income folks who are the ones least able to afford that extra burden. So okay. Something I'm not in favor of.
Follow-up question real quick. How high should a parking ticket be?
Well, I know it shouldn't be. I can tell you right now, when they used to be $25 an hour, I plead guilty. I played a little bit of Russian roulette, and I'd sit there and amortize it out over the course of a year and say the amount of times I get caught versus the amount of times I don't get caught, it evens out. But when it's $75 an hour, my wife isn't nearly as forgiving as she once was with a parking ticket.
All right. Thank you. Next name up. Michaela Alioto-Pierre. I know you're big on education. This question is, do you support Proposition 8 making it city policy that every family should have the choice of sending their children to a quality neighborhood school?
Yes, I do. I strongly support it. I made the choice to send my children to neighborhood schools. We go to Catholic schools, but we go to schools within our neighborhoods. And one thing that I have found as we look at San Francisco and as we look at the children in San Francisco, we're losing our kids. We have fewer children per capita in our beautiful city than any other city in the nation. And a lot of it comes down to school choice. We hear that time in and time out, people's ability to choose where they send their child to school. What we've also heard from in certain communities is that when you look at certain communities, especially those in the Bayview and Asian communities in the Richmond, they want their kids close to them. They don't want them taking 45-minute bus rides across town. The choice is a real valid one. When you have your children close to you, you set up programs within your communities, your churches and community centers, and you have tutorials and athletic programs, and the kids have something to do. They're not spending all their time on Muni. And so when it comes down to a family's choice, they need to be able to choose.
And how do you balance that really quickly with to make sure that all the schools are fair and that there's diversity?
Well, we certainly need diversity, and we need to make sure that all of our schools across the board are good. And one thing that we see is that when we don't have neighborhood schools, we have families who aren't investing in them. And when a school is in your community, you have a higher level of parental involvement, and you have a higher level of community support.
Okay. Next up. Public Defender Jeff Adachi. Would you support increasing the number of residential condo conversions allowed each year?
I think it's a question of looking at the housing stock and looking at the rental stock that's available, because unless we have a balance, we will always be in a position of not being able to provide housing. And so my answer to that question is it depends on the situation, because you know you're not going to be able to continue to you know provide the kind of housing needs that we have in the city. And we know that on both sides, whether it's a rental or a homeowner, that we need to have the housing stock that's available to everyone.
Okay, so back to the question.
Yeah.
Are you in favor of increasing the – I know it's a hot political issue, and it's one that's rife with controversy, but when it comes to residential condo conversions, that's where do you stand? Are you in favor of increasing it or what?
I am in favor of increasing it, but we have to make sure that we balance it against the other needs, particularly rental needs in the city.
So you're in favor of increasing it on condition?
That's right.
Okay. San Francisco Mayor Ed Lee.
Hi, Phil.
Hello. Back to a transportation issue. Do you favor charging drivers a London-style congestion fee for driving in and out of the downtown?
No, I do not. I think it's premature. We haven't gone that far in our studies for congestion pricing, I think you're referring to. But I do say that we need to support Muni. We need to make sure that people are taking public transportation in every respect, and we need to incentivize that behavior to do so. So I'm in favor of incentivizing public transportation. I'm in favor of our SF Park program that we just started with SFMTA, which means people who are looking for parking can find it on their cell phones in a modern way, as long as they're not using the cell phone while they're driving. And we have to warn on that, because that'll be a high, high ticket price. But ultimately, I think congestion pricing is premature. We haven't done enough research for it. It will cause other repercussions that we're not ready for. And I also think that there's a very strong feeling from the neighborhoods and the businesses they're not ready for it as well.
Okay, what about congestion pricing, the parking meters going up and down?
Yes. I mean, I'm in favor of adjusted pricing for parking where there's a high demand in certain areas. We can charge a little more so we can incentivize people to go to other areas. I mean, that's what SF Park does as a program, is allows you to see where the less expensive parking might be so that you can walk a block or two a little bit more to get to where you need to go. But it's smart because it prevents congestion. It prevents the Muni buses and pedestrian safety issues from coming aboard when you have a pricing that's fixed to areas where we can get more parking or have more parking available and not congest the areas where it's most popular.
And parking tickets, do you think there's such a thing as a too high price on a parking ticket?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I've heard from many small businesses, and I know that they have reached their limit when it comes to parking prices. I think, again, we need to work with every commercial corridor of our city to make sure we get their input about the parking policies of the city. And I will ensure that with Ed Riskin being at the helm of the MTA.
All right. Former Supervisor Bevan Dufty. And this is a supervisorial question. Would you support a charter amendment creating a combination of 11 both citywide and district supervisorial seats?
That's a system that they use in Washington, D.C., and some people do like it, that you have both a combination of at-large and district. I was a district elected supervisor, and I think it's valuable and worthwhile. I've liked having a district to focus on and be responsible for. So unless I saw outcry, which I haven't seen from the citizenry, I'm content with the system as it is.
So, by the way, how do you feel about ranked choice voting?
Love it.
Okay. Okay, Supervisor David Chu. What are the three most critical problems facing the city at this time?
First and foremost, we have lost tens of thousands of jobs in the last couple of years, hundreds of companies over the last decade. I think we need to build a 21st century economy here in the city. The second challenge I think facing us is in recent years our demographics have changed significantly. We have lost thousands of families. We have lost almost half of our African-American community. We've lost thousands of tenants who have been evicted, homeowners who have been foreclosed upon. We need to change those trends and make sure that family flight is halted, make sure that the economic, the ethnic, the diversity that we love about our city manages to stay here. I think the third most significant challenge has to do with how we are running our government. We have a $6.8 billion, 26,000 employee, 50 department corporation known as the City and County of San Francisco. I don't think anyone here in this room thinks that we get $6.8 billion worth of value for that. And there are many, many things I think we need to do to make our government more efficient.
Okay, give us two.
There are 15 departments that regulate the business community. There are actually 14 departments that provide workforce programs. We need to consolidate. We need to streamline to make sure that those of us who are trying to create jobs in the city, those of you who run small businesses, aren't getting nickeled and dimed to death, aren't having to be shuttled around from bureaucrat to bureaucrat to do the work that you want to do.
And the other one?
I was trying to bundle two in one, but I'll give another one. One of the reasons families are leaving San Francisco is we don't have enough child care. Only 40% of our city, of our parents, actually have access to child care. There are three city programs that govern child care policy. We need to consolidate that.
Assessor Recorder Phil Ting. Will you be supporting or opposing the $248 million road repaving and street safety bond measure that is going to be on the November ballot?
I'll be supporting it, but I have grave reservations that we aren't setting aside enough revenue in our annual budget, in our general fund, to make sure that we're making these maintenance every single year. I don't think a city should really have to do a road repaving bond. I know that we're in this situation because we have tough fiscal issues, but I think that we need to be fiscally more prudent to be setting aside that money into infrastructure. It's easy to defer all that every single year. I know we have very, very tough decisions to make, but I know that we need to prioritize infrastructure and long-term viability for our city. We need to make sure that roads are paved. We need to make sure we're investing in muni. We need to make sure we're investing in all the water undergrounds. And I think that that's so important to make sure that our city is as vibrant as possible so that we can continue to grow, not just population-wise, but business-wise.
But we hear that time and time again. And then when it's budget time, we have everybody come to City Hall and say, we need money for our ongoing programs. Mm-hmm. And so the road money goes there. What can you do to stop that?
Well, I think you're going to have to continue to try to become more efficient in San Francisco. One thing that we've done is, in our office, is try to figure out how we can grow revenue. We brought in over $300 million above our budget over the last 6 years just by investing in making things more efficient. I think that a lot of times in government, as Supervisor Chu talked about, we're going to be needing to continue to become more efficient. If every single muni bus line actually was 1 minute faster, just think about it, just 60 seconds faster, that would save $20 million. That would be enough to actually implement the first phase of our transit effectiveness plan, which we say we don't have any money for. So just by doing some of those things to make things more efficient, it's literally like adding more buses on the road.
State Senator Leland Yee. What would you do to increase the economic growth in the city?
Well, first off, what I'm going to do is to change the general reputation of the city and county of San Francisco that we are unfriendly towards business. And I might just suggest that one of the things that we ought to do is to assign case managers to different merchant corridor, to different types of industries, to different types of businesses. We do that in the social service field, of which I know quite a bit. And we ought to then assign those case managers to different businesses and make sure that we in City Hall knows that if there's a problem, that we deal with those kinds of problems a lot sooner than later. I don't want to hear about businesses so frustrated that they're ready to leave San Francisco. I want to hear about the problems early on, and to see if we can take care of those problems early on and then deal with, then figure out how we can maybe help them expand their business and their stay in San Francisco. I think that that's just one small example of what I want to do to make San Francisco a lot more business friendly.
You know, it's like I said, we hear this time and time again through the years, and then when I talk with small business people, they say, I just got hit with this bill for the city for repainting my white zone, and it's gone up to a couple of $100s more. I'm now being hit with this fee for this inspection. It seems like their fees just keep coming right in as a way to balance the budget. How do you accomplish both?
Well, what I've proposed, no one has ever talked about. No one has ever talked about assigning case managers to businesses. That's been a model that's been used on the healthcare side, social service side. I think that we need to do that. If we had case managers, we would not have businesses saying that, you know, I'm at a brink where I need to leave San Francisco because the fees are too much, the taxes are too much, the bureaucracy is just too much. By having these case managers, you would then know that there are problems early on. And so you don't end up having businesses so frustrated that they're just one step outside of San Francisco already ready to leave out of San Francisco. So having those case managers would, in fact, prevent the kinds of things that you're suggesting.
I suppose they'd also be spending a lot of time down at City Hall, since a lot of the problem seems to be emanating from there.
Well, you know me. I'm going to make sure that those individuals are going to be out in the neighborhoods and in the communities and not stuck in City Hall.
We've had a couple of these mayoral debates, and there's usually been somebody in the audience at the end that comes up and says to me, why didn't we ask this question? So this is a question that popped up. Yes, it's a very simple one. People in the city now are feeling less and less safe when they go out. What can you do about it?
Well, first of all, it starts with how we budget. Because when we have budget deficits, we cut every department equally. We do top-down deficit management. We have to do bottom-up budgeting, where we go department by department and we figure out what are the investments in the critical services that we absolutely need to ensure safety and security in the community. That's making sure that we don't cut back in our investment in things like police and fire, number one. I also think it's critically important that our policemen live in the city, because such a small amount do. And while we can't impact the ones now that have already moved out, but as we have new recruits of classes, I would love to set up structures with local financial institutions to provide low-cost loans for the new recruits as they're getting out of the academy, so they have the ability to buy homes. And then by the time they pay off those mortgages, they're retired, they're still living in our community, they're walking our streets and help ensuring our security.
Okay. And what would your evaluation of the safety of San Francisco streets be right now, in your opinion?
I think in some areas it feels safe and secure, and I think in other areas of the city it does not. So I think that's another problem that we have in our community, that we have to make sure that we are supporting all of our residents, that we're making sure that all of our neighborhoods are supported and safe, and I don't think that's the case right now. I spend a lot of time at muni stops and going door to door. I've met with thousands and thousands of residents, I do hear differences depending on what neighborhood you're in.
Do you support Dennis Herrera's gang injunctions or the call for do you?
I'm supportive of preventive care. I think that as a mother of a 22-year-old and an 18-year-old, a brain is not fully developed until the age of 24. And I think what we need to do when kids make bad decisions and, you know, unfortunately are in tough situations, rather than being punitive and putting them to detention, I think we have to look for preventative solutions. That's why I'm a big supporter of community schools, where we're providing additional resources for kids, whether that's social work or after-school programs, to give them the support that they need to be successful in life and not to be punitive.
Okay. San Francisco, former Supervisor Tony Hall.
Come on out with it, Phil.
Oh, come on. It's just such an easy one for you. I just don't know what to do. Okay. Where do you stand on the two pension reform measures going before voters
in November?
Oh, boy.
I am not supporting either one. Let me try to tell you why, Phil. We have a $7 billion debt when it comes to pension reform that has to be paid off, a $7 billion debt, and it's growing by $500 million every year, Ed Lee's City Family Consensus Plan was really kicking the can down the road, like my commercial says, because it's going to add $4.5 billion onto that growing debt in the next 6 years. Jeff Adachi's plan is a little bit better, cuts that debt growth a little bit more, but it's only going to save about $4 billion. Let me draw a parallel, if I can. There's a big brick wall out there. It's called bankruptcy. Several other cities in the state of California have already gone into bankruptcy. This car is traveling 100 miles an hour towards that wall. Ed Lee's plan slows the impact down to 95 miles an hour. Jeff Adachi's plan slows it down to 90 miles an hour. Tony Hall's plan, what I will do as mayor is change the pension benefits and health benefits paid to our employees to be in line with the private sector. Things like 401ks, reinstitute pay for performance, like the old civil service system called for.
So you would go from a fixed rate pension return to a 401k plan for public employees?
That would be one of the alternatives. I would also increase the benefits paid, the contributions paid by unvested employees, and the cops and the firemen union never got this straight. My plan would protect those vested in the system. It would require new contributions on the part of new hirees and people brought into the system for their higher contributions for their health care and their pensions. And it could be paid off over a period of time because we have to bite the bullet because of the past promises made by mayors who promised more than they can deliver.
But aren't you passing the bullet down to the new hires to bite?
Oh, absolutely. There's no other way to do this.
So the ones that have it now are...
You cannot break your promises, and Tony Hall as mayor will not break his promises.
Work that into a good commercial. Okay, Supervisor John Avalos. Real quick, people have asked about this one repeatedly. They say that City Hall in the past couple of years has been dysfunctional, and it now appears to at least be getting on some sort of track as mayor. What would you do to keep it on that, or is that a healthy course?
Well, I think there's been a lot of discussion about civility and how important it is. I think it's important, but I think vision is also important for San Francisco. And I also wonder about civility if we're just being civil to each other within City Hall and we're not being civil with the residents of this city, are we really doing the work that we really need to be doing? I have concerns about how City Hall has been operating lately. I believe that it's forgetting the small businesses and residents, especially residents on the southern part of San Francisco and the southeast sector of San Francisco, my district especially. We have a foreclosure crisis that's happening in this city, and civility is not doing much to deal with that. In fact, the civility of City Hall is not really even aware that we have a crisis like that in San Francisco. So for me to have a functional government, it has us working together and cordially working together, but also understanding what's outside of San Francisco that we need to be civil at to respond to.
Okay, because there's a line, the question is sort of the line between debate, differences in policy, and things getting personal. So in your opinion on things getting personal down there?
Actually, I don't believe it's necessary to get personal in politics, and I've actually been able to practice a politics that has not been that, and I can fit easily with the tension of debate, with the tension of policy decisions that we have to make and disagreement. That's part of the political process. That's part of democracy. San Francisco has an amazing tradition of civic participation that I think is is healthy in the city, and I want to see it continue and grow. Sometimes we have disagreements, but when they become personal, that's when I think that we fail to do what's best for the public good.
Thank you. Although I must say it is entertaining. And speaking of the personal and the political, now we're going to have them all mixed up because I'm going to draw names out of here, and each candidate will be allowed to ask any other candidate of their choosing a question. Any question, any candidate, okay? First up, Public Defender Jeff Adachi.
I have a question for Mayor Lee. You and I are the only candidates that have elected not to take public financing. And as you know, under the system, I think all the other candidates have applied for up to $900,000 in public financing. And I've read your comments. I think we're similar on the points that we both said because of the city's fiscal crisis, we can't see taking $900,000 for our campaigns at this time. The question I have for you, though, is that I have agreed to stay within the spending cap to make sure that we have a level playing field. Will you today agree to stay within that spending cap?
Thank you. Thank you, Jeff. But I don't have a billionaire funding my campaign, so I'm not so sure I can do that.
Neither
Jeff,
do I.
You know, I do agree that when I came into this late, I was going to raise as much money as I could from residents of this city and private individuals and keep to all of the campaign contribution limits that the campaign requires us to do. And we'll run a clean campaign. I did limit myself and refused to take public financing because I made those tough decisions with members of the Board of Supervisors to cut a lot of valuable programs in this city. And, you know, my heart is really with a lot of programs that we would have funded better if we had a more robust economy and the state didn't hit us as hard. We would have a lot more programs that I feel would feel very proud of. But we made those tough decisions. We worked with all of the communities to find out the core city services that we had to keep. And we did it in cooperation with many, many neighborhoods and with members of the Board of Supervisors and the community-based agencies that provide that service. We did a very, very collaborative effort, well worth this name here of Alliance for Jobs. We found those alliances and did it in a positive way.
So the short answer is no?
No.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you.
Bevan Dufty.
Michaela, you authored the biotech tax credit. And when that program started, we had two biotech businesses in San Francisco, which has grown to 72, and I was proud to work with you and Mayor Newsom. Can you talk about how you feel that that has connected to education in San Francisco, and what impacts do you see, and how do you see that in terms of other sectors we want to grow?
Thank you, Supervisor Dufty. I appreciate that question. As a member of the Board of Supervisors, it was not a setup. As a member of the Board of Supervisors, the very first thing I did on the board was to create San Francisco's very first economic plan. And what the economic plan did is it looked at potential growth job growth opportunities for San Francisco. We went on. Bevin was, I believe, one of the co-sponsors of the biotech payroll tax exemption. He was absolutely right. When we started, we had one or two biotech companies in San Francisco, and today we have 74. For every one PhD position in a biotech company, we created 6 to 7 entry-level jobs. And in addition to that, we created hundreds, quite literally hundreds of building trade jobs, because the buildings themselves are massive. When we did it also in conjunction with the school district. So we had biotech classes in our high schools. Galileo has one of the best. And City College put together a biotech program as well. And so as our children were going to high school, they were learning to pick biotech as a source of interest. They were studying it. They were going on, taking those classes at City College, and then they were taking the jobs that we were actually creating here as a city. Okay. It was a wonderful model, and one that we should be duplicating. Thank you for the question.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah.
Okay, Mayor Ed Lee.
Thank you. This will be a question to former Supervisor Bevin Dufty. Supervisor Dufty, we've worked together a lot in City Hall. I know you learned a lot and delivered a lot of services to the neighborhood service program that you were heading up. We worked together to make sure Halloween was safe and that it improves year after year to make sure that event is very positive for the area. We walked the transgender march together to make sure that people who were marginalized didn't continue feeling that way. You know, you've created a very civil tone in these mayoral debates that I've watched, and I really appreciated that. And I wanted to give you an opportunity to talk about things that have yet to be covered in these mayoral debates that you think are important to the city of San Francisco.
Thank you, Mayor. Rather talking about the future, I want to tell you for a minute about my past.
Wait a minute. Let's go with the question.
He's asking me.
Right.
I'll get to it, Phil. I can handle a question.
Okay, but when the time's out, the time's out.
Roll my time back.
Okay, it's rolled.
So when I grew up, my mom worked in the civil rights movement, and she went to work in 1964 for the National Council on Negro Women. And at that time, to register to vote in New York, you had to pass a literacy test if you were black. And she worked in a storefront on 116th Street. And when I was 9 years old, that was my daycare. And I went every day and saw people from 21 to 91 learning to read at a ninth grade level. I was transformed by that experience. And it made me think how amazing it would be to be the person that these individuals voted for and believed that they could bring change. And I've been in this process my entire life, and I believe democracy is about choice. And I have faith that I can be a good candidate and I can demonstrate what I want to do without tearing down anybody else. And that's why I like rank choice voting, because you should be cautious for the bricks you throw, because they may bounce right back on you. Does that answer the question?
I don't know. Does that answer your question?
Certainly. Thank you. Yes.
So just to clarify, what issues are we should be talking about that we haven't?
I think we should be talking about a black agenda, all 11 of us. And that's what I think is missing in this city, is to have an agenda on a day-to-day basis, how we're going to do that. And many of us have those experiences. Obviously, Mayor Lee, working in the civil rights movement. Obviously, Jeff Adachi, who has run a tremendous public safety agency and pulled people out of the justice system. But I believe that we have to talk about changing, not just talking in platitudes, but I can talk about what I started at Mission High School. I can talk about the work that I do with the Hunters Point Family Foundation, which is pulling young adults out of crime in public housing. And I think we need to talk about the decimation of black business, which is unprecedented in the history of San Francisco. We have lost more black businesses in the past 10 years than we've ever lost in the history of this city. And it's not just about public sector contracting. It's also about getting the private sector to do a better job, because black businesses hire people from the community and can make a difference, and we need a plan.
Good. That's the answer. Joanna Reese.
I'm going to ask David Chu. So, Mayor
Newsom had initiated discussions with Twitter a long time ago, and you, along with the sponsorship of Jane Kim, helped steward that legislation, the mid-market tax break, through the Board of Supervisors. While I view it as a Band-Aid solution where we need wholesale reform, how did you calculate what the positive economic impact would be to the city with the mid-market tax break, and do you believe that we need to take steps to have wholesale reform across the growth economy?
The quick answer to your final question is absolutely yes. And let me start by saying that for over 8 years, before I ran for the Board of Supervisors, I was the founder and chief operating officer of a technology company. And we have known in recent years that many of our tech companies are leaving our city. And so when in November of last year, the CFO of Twitter told me that he was likely to leave San Francisco, we worked with the Newsom administration, and I actually called my newly elected colleague, Jane Kim, on her way to the airport as she was heading town after her election, to tell her that we needed to fix this Twitter issue. Now, the solution was not a tax break for Twitter. The solution was a tax incentive for new businesses that are creating new jobs in the Tenderloin mid-market region, which has been blighted for decades. And I think we know that if Twitter had left, that would have meant $500,000 hit to our general coffers. With Twitter staying here, that's going to mean literally millions of dollars a year of new revenues because of the halo effect of keeping this 21st century company here. And this is why I was proud to both champion that legislation as well as legislation to make sure that companies like Zynga, like Yelp, like other startups are not the only companies in the entire country that have their stock options taxed.
What about, that's the new companies, what about the ones that have been here? What kind of breaks or help are you going to give the ones that have been paying for the streets and stuff for the last 20 or 30 years?
Ever since I served on our city Small Business Commission, and I want to thank those of you who represent the small business community here in this room, I have called for comprehensive business tax reform. We need to make sure that our 80,000 small businesses that are the lifeblood of this city, that are employing our local residences, that they also have an opportunity to thrive. And I don't think that a payroll tax that penalizes the creation of jobs, that penalizes the cost of labor, is the right way for us to go. And this is why in this recent budget process, I supported some money so that we could hire some economists and consultants to give us a roadmap in where we need to go in the coming future.
State Senator Leland Yee.
Well, my question is to Mr. Herrera. Mr. Herrera, you know, recently I think I read somewhere that you thought that Mohamed Nuru, who's the new director of public work, was a bad choice. And maybe you can help me and other individuals to understand exactly why you took that position.
Thank you, Senator Yee. there was a little controversy around City Hall about that today. But listen, you can have differences of opinion. Mayor Lee and Amy Brown made a selection of Mohamed Nuru to be the interim head of DPW. It is not a pick that I happen to agree with for a variety of reasons. First, the controller has issued a blistering report several years ago with respect to the mishandling of public funds that happened under Mr. Nuru's watch. Secondly, I did a report in 2004 that indicated that Mr. Nuru had pressured city contractors to engage in political activity on city time using taxpayer dollars. That's not something I think should be countenanced. I think that we should hold the heads of our city departments, especially those that are as vital as DPW, 1,200 people, $129 million budget, to the highest ethical standard. And unfortunately, Mr. Nuru's behavior over the course of the last 15 years, to me, demonstrates that he is not someone who should be put in that position of authority. I say that fully respecting the hard work that he has put in at DPW in other positions in terms of street cleaning, but I just think that there are better selections which would solidify the public's trust in the integrity of government than having Mr. Nuru be the head of DPW.
Well, Dennis Ferreira, your turn.
My question is for Senator Yee.
Got a little infield action going here.
Yeah. No, Senator, the last several debates you've talked quite extensively about a proposal that you have to redo the Ethics Commission, and you've talked about your belief that power brokers are in charge of City Hall. And I kind of want to explore, number one, what you mean by that, and number two, are you advocating that we go back to the way it used to be, where the city attorney and district attorney had control of all ethical investigations? Because I don't know if I want that responsibility back in my bailiwick. But or do you have another proposal? I'd like to hear what it is.
Let me just say that in recent months, I have seen my city being torn apart by power brokers. These are not lobbyists and so on. These are unregulated, unregistered individuals who are extremely influential in the city. They created a independent expenditure committee that the Ethics Commission said that you can, in fact, coordinate with a campaign control committee. That happened in the state of California, happened in Sacramento. The FPPC that regulates politicians would come down on all of us with a ton of brick, with so fast that we didn't know what hit us. But somehow in San Francisco, you have these unregistered, unregulated individuals that are just simply stealing our elections, just simply trashing our ethics, our basic core as to how we run our election. And so what I am proposing is, in fact, a 21-point plan that is going to take politicians out of the control of the Ethics Commission. The grand jury, San Francisco grand jury, has already said that it is a sleepless watchdog. I've indicated that it is a toothless tiger. And what we need to do is to give it more power, independent power, transparent oversight in all of the regulations and all the governance of politicians and those individuals associated with that. And so having investigators that will investigate proactively rather than reactively, having the resources to kind of look into some of these issues that have been identified, those are the things that we've got to do. We've got to bring all of those power brokers under control. If not, they will continue to destroy the basis of our democracy here in San Francisco.
So who are the power brokers?
I think that as we have seen in the papers, and I think, Phil, you have reported that, there are individuals who are out there that are, again, as I said, they are not registered. They are not regulated. These are individuals that have access to City Hall, and they don't report. You know, when lobbyists lobby, they not only have to register that they are influencing or trying to influence politicians, they also have to kind of report as to specifically the activities related to that. They have to also talk about what kinds of campaigns they are engaged in. Power brokers don't have to do that. And so what the proposal that I have is to, again, regulate those individuals, provide some teeth to the Ethics Commission so that the Ethics Commission will no longer be appointments of politicians. Okay. They ought to be appointments of regular individuals, and then the Ethics Commission needs to be empowered by investigators and other resources so that they can, in fact, independently enforce the rules and regulations related to these political activities. All right.
David Chu, question?
I have a question for Ed Lee. So, Ed, about a week or two before you told the world that you were considering running for mayor, you told me that you had looked at yourself in the mirror, you didn't have the fire in the belly, you didn't want to run, but that you were having trouble saying no to Willie Brown and Rose Pack.
Could you tell me what's happened? What's changed in your mind over the last couple weeks?
Thank you, Supervisor, for that question. It's a big surprise you would ask that. I did change my mind, and I've talked to you about it on several occasions. And I changed my mind because my working with you, Supervisor Chu, and with all the rest of the supervisors, had given me some great hope that this city can succeed in the things that it wants to do. If we continue the high level of civility that we've accomplished and we set the tone since January, if we continue on the course of solving problems in a better civil engagement that we've conducted ourselves in, if we do the kinds of things that the public has asked us to do, not engage in misdirected public rancor, not call each other names, but to honestly work on those things of bridging the budget gap, of doing it in a way in which neighborhoods are so respectful and community-based agencies and members of the Board of Supervisors that for the very first time you introduced a balanced budget to the standing ovation of people that come to Room 200, that's a newfound respect for the way we do government. I want to keep that up. That is what changed my mind. And people like Senator Feinstein and others who talk to me about standing up to do this, about making sure that I don't let it go, about keeping that philosophy of good government ahead of us and keeping to get things done. That's what I've been about. That's what changed my mind. And I will do my best to continue that dialogue, that level of public service, because this city needs and wants to succeed in everything it does. And I'm so glad that we're here at the Alliance for Jobs, because that's what you want to have out of your city government.
Assessor Recorder Phil Ting. Question.
Mr. Mayor, while we're still doing better in terms of unemployment, job creation is still a major issue, obviously, because we're all here tonight. Can you tell us about your plan for high-wage jobs here in San Francisco in the coming years?
Thank you, Phil. Well, first of all, I want to thank you, Phil, because you, as Assessor Recorder, have worked outside of the box. Not only have you done a good job in collecting our revenue, but I welcomed in and I embraced this whole Go Solar program that you've done. It's a wonderful program because it created new types of jobs, the kind of jobs that Mission Bay, after the leadership of Mayor Brown and certainly Mayor Gavin Newsom, when they helped create the foundation for these new tech jobs and life sciences jobs, we have embraced that, and that's our new economy. And so working along the same themes, a mayor has to make sure these deals are done. And with the new tech companies, I've been working with Supervisor Mark Farrell, Supervisor David Chu, of course, Supervisor Mercurimi and others have come in and said we need to dialogue with our tech companies. We need to form the Technology Advisory Committee, which we did months ago right after the Twitter settlement was made, because they wanted in on the way the city functions so that they can help change it to make it more business-friendly and job-friendly. And one of the first things that we've agreed to do, again, with Supervisor Chu's concurrence and the board, is to look at the way our payroll tax system works, because it's right now job punishing when we should be at the opposite of job creation and job sustaining. So that will be a basis upon the new technology, but it's also listening to the technology company's advice, because they're forming some brand new products that we need to advertise.
We're over the time.
Okay, but
way
I'm excited
over.
About this.
Obviously.
Thank you.
He handed you the ball, you ran with it. Tony Hall.
Thank you, Phil. You know, Phil, I've got too much respect for this audience out here tonight to be playing, being part of a mutual admiration society or pitching softball or gotcha questions. That's not my style. You know, folks, I've been in this business over 35 years. As an executive in 9 different city departments. Everybody knows where I stand as a conservative, moderate, whatever you want to call me, liberal, I don't care, where I stand on creating jobs, business, and home ownership. But I'd like to direct this question, if I can, to the audience. Okay? It's a rhetorical question. I want you to go home and think tonight about the biggest crisis that I've seen and you're going to witness in your lifetime, this pension tsunami coming your way. This is going to be a $12 billion problem
within 5 to 6 years. Twice as big as our current budget, 6 times bigger than the budget that Frank Jordan ran this city with. You're going to be without services. We're going to be facing bankruptcy. I do not understand why I'm the only one up here talking about complete and fundamental pension reform that revamps and recreates the whole system. If we don't do that, if we adhere to one plan by Ed Lee, which was a union-dictated plan, or we go to Adachi's plan, which is only going to save maybe 10% of what we need, we're going to be in trouble, folks. So I want you to go home tonight and think about this, because it's your city. I'll carry the flag. I'll correct it for you. I know how to correct it. With your help, we can get out of this mess. We won't hit that wall that I talked about. Help me get there. Go home and think about this question. It's the most important question that you're going to be faced with tonight. Thank you.
McKaylee Elliott up here. Question?
I'm going to direct my question to Supervisor Dufty. Bevin and I have a number of things in common, but probably the biggest is that we both have five-year-olds. And so we have talked a lot and shared a lot about what it means to raise a family in San Francisco and how we can help encourage our middle class to stay in San Francisco. Now, that's not where my question's going. The other day, I was at the LGBT Center down at the bottom floor, and I was talking to about 10 people who were playing games. And they were all retirees. And their question to me was, why is it that you're always talking about families, and why is it that you're always talking about young people? I think it's very important that we do. But they said, what about us? And it is something that we don't focus enough about. Bevin had mentioned that we don't focus enough about the issues related to African Americans. But the fact of the matter is, too, is that this is a city with over 52% people over the age of 50. And we don't talk enough about it. And one of the conversations I had focused a lot on the new Project 55 Laguna, which is specifically for LGBT retirees. And then we also voted and built the Goldman Center for Aging on Geary Street. And so my question here is, what are we going to do for our aging population? The issues regarding working, living in place so that you can live in a home and stay there for the rest of your life, and their health care and their health care benefits. Here we are, the Alliance for Jobs and Sustainable Growth, and probably one of the biggest issues in front of us is the CPMC rebuild and how we're going to deal with health care in San Francisco. And so, Bevin?
Thank you.
There you go.
Thank you, Michaela. The fastest growing segment of San Francisco's population are people over the age of 85. And so I do believe that the next mayor is going to have to create a master plan to focus on some of the issues that Michaela's question draws out. I do want to take a minute and reflect on the fact that the seniors that Michaela was seeing at the LGBT Center face difficult choices. If you think about people that are in their 60s, 70s, and 80s, when they came out, it wasn't easy. And most individuals immediately lost contact with their families. Many of these individuals have lost partners to the AIDS epidemic. And so to age now and to face the possibility that you could go into a senior facility that's not culturally competent, that could mean after years of being out and risking so much in your life that you'd be forced to go back in the closet. And I think that's unacceptable, and I think that's why Open House fought so hard for 55 Laguna. But the things that we've got to address involve adult day health centers. We've seen some dramatic cuts at the state level, which are affecting the Bayview Adult Day Health Center and having an impact on people having that engagement and activity that keeps them well. Our in-home care workers, it's a very important system that we have, and San Francisco has really led the way in providing health coverage and proper compensation for those individuals that provide in-home care. And I think part of what we really need to do is to have a dialogue and educate the public, because we save so much money as a result of having people being able to live with dignity in their homes. Okay. And then I would simply say that paratransit is a huge issue for many people, and that we don't have a dedicated funding stream. So I definitely think that as mayor, my priority would be to bring people together and to create a master plan, because that growth in that segment is a huge issue for San Francisco.
Okay. It's tough to figure out which was longer, the question or the answer, but you both did a handoff. John Avalos.
I have a question for the public defender.
and it's actually not related to pension reform. I actually really have admired your work as a public defender, and you and I have had agreements and some disagreements, mostly agreements on how we handle budgeting and how we do the work. But your perspective is really important as a public defender, working with people who are involved in street life and crime, and your work trying to make sure that they can get out of that life. What do you see as the root causes of why people get involved in crime, and what is your response? What would your response be as mayor to be able to get the root causes of crime in our streets?
Well, thank you for your question. I've spent my entire career in criminal justice, and the reason I've chosen this field is because it gives you the opportunity to turn people's lives around. That's really why we love doing what we do. People get into trouble, they get in the courts. There's a reason why. It could be alcohol, it could be abuse, it could be violence. All of these things contribute to what a person becomes. And so there's two things that we need to do. We need to make sure that we prevent as much as possible things that are going to adversely impact a young person. And that's why I've championed programs, as you have, Supervisor Avalos, that would help young people turn their lives around and stay out of trouble. The second thing is that for people who are getting out of jail, who are getting out of prison, and we have 33,000 people who are going to be released in October, what are we going to do about that? What's the plan? I have worked on reentry programs that provide education, employment, drug treatment to people coming out, and intensive case management. That's going to be the challenge that San Francisco is going to face. When we talk about public safety, it means everybody's safety. And if we can help people turn their lives around, break down barriers, as I have through our Clean Slate program, and help people clear their records so they can find work, that's what I will do as mayor, and I look forward to working with everybody on that.
Now it's my turn. Question for everyone. We just go straight down here real quick. Give you a couple seconds. Being mayor, you're going to be taking over the reins at City Hall. You've had predecessors. You've got people that come after you. My question is, what grade would you give Gavin Newsom's time as mayor and him as mayor? He's your predecessor. Simple as that. Jeff?
I would give him a B+.
Kayla Alioto Pierre?
No. I'd give him an A.
John Avalos?
C+.
Bevan Dufty?
A-, got to work harder always.
D to F.
Ooh.
Wow.
Yeah. B+. B+, A-.
A.
Bevan, you and I agree now. A-. Always have to work harder.
A-.
My grading system, pass, not passy, pass.
All right.
That was good.
The tiger never changes his stripes.
Pardon?
The tiger never changes his stripes. Use the tiger analogy.
All right, we're going to have round three. We got a certain amount of time because everybody sort of went over their time before we do their outgoes. So bear with me. It's luck of the draw. Whoever gets the question gets the question. Cool. And whoever answers it until we run out of time. And the first one goes to Joanna Rees. And the question is, please explain why you either support or oppose district elections.
I support district elections in that it really gives each district supervisor an opportunity to engage deeply with the constituents in that district and really address the issues of the district. And it will take strong leadership of the mayor and a respect for each district supervisor to work in a collaborative way to find the common ground that serves the city as a whole.
Okay. Maybe if everybody answers that quickly, we can get everybody in. Tony Hall. Do you support city ownership of the PG&E electric distribution system?
That's a good one, because when I was on the board, I couldn't see how the city, fumbling up the MTA and a few other things, could possibly handle that. Today, I'm not so sure. The city is so misrun, it might as well take a shot at it. You know what I'm saying?
Ed Lee, would you support a planning code amendment that limits the use of discretionary review appeals for residential construction?
Limits the residential appeals?
Yeah, discretionary review.
Discretionary review. Yes, I would. I believe that we've got too many areas of our planning process where it's not really substantive appeals. People are doing it for political reasons, and I think that that has stalemated and stalled good, solid development that's going to create more jobs. And so we do have to review that, and I think I would support that.
Supervisor David Chu, do you support rezoning along major transit corridors such as Geary Boulevard, Mission Street, to increase allowable residential unit density?
I would support that. I think that it is a basic tenet of smart growth that we encourage development around our transit corridors, particularly our major transit corridors. So I certainly think that the best way, if we are going to continue to grow housing in San Francisco, which I think everyone here would agree with, we need to do it in ways that are smart. This is why I supported the Shipyard Project, the Park Merced Project, the Treasure Island Project, and I would support development around major transit corridors.
Okay. Assessor and Porter Phil Ting, do you support the Board of Supervisors' recent approval of the redevelopment plans for Park Merced?
I support it in principle, but I have many concerns. I don't know that I would have signed the document that actually reached Mayor Lee's desk. I think I would have wanted to work harder to make sure that the 1,500 rent-controlled units actually remained rent-controlled, and that we make sure that we don't evict any tenants, and that we make sure that we have complete protections for those folks. I live very close to that Park Merced neighborhood. I used to work at San Francisco State. It's not a small neighborhood. 1,500 rent-controlled units is the equivalent of like a neighborhood in San Francisco. And I think that we have to make sure before we move ahead and demolish those neighbors and move them and inconvenience them that they have every protection, not just today, but long-term, that they would receive if they had stayed there.
Okay. City Attorney Dennis Herrera, if you were mayor, what would you do or what do you see as the ingredients for CPMC going in on Van Ness Avenue?
I think that, when people talk about what the economic future of San Francisco is, a lot of folks talk about tech and a lot of people talk about small business, and these are all very worthwhile. I happen to believe that the future of San Francisco, both short and long term, is the life sciences and healthcare research, making sure that all our hospitals are rebuilt. Number one, that leads to immediate stimulus for a construction industry that has been decimated over the course of the last several years. But more importantly, long term, you better make sure that if you can, if you want to attract and retain an educated workforce, if you want to make sure that you are an international gateway city in an era where we have an aging population, you better have world-class health facilities, research, and care. Because that is what's going to ensure that you can be a model for what a 21st century American city needs to be 50, 75 years from now. So I know that a lot of people say, are you for it or against it? I am for rebuilding the hospitals. Of course, we have to make sure we balance our city's needs, and we're going to have a negotiation that's going forward. I know Ed Lee is leading negotiations on that, but it is an imperative that we get all these hospitals rebuilt to seismic standards. It is good in short term. In terms of providing immediate stimulus, and long-term, it's even more important, the future of San Francisco.
Jeff Adachi, could you explain whether you support or oppose ranked choice voting for city officials?
Yeah, I support ranked choice voting. I think it gives the voters an opportunity to, you know, choose... when they're choosing from a field, I mean, you can see right here, they have different strengths that they're looking for in their leaders. And it gives the voter an opportunity to have more than one vote, which is, I think, part of a democracy. If we don't give voters the opportunity to cast their vote in the event that their candidate is eliminated, I think it hurts democracy. So I am a supporter of ranked choice voting, and I think that we'll see how it works very well in this race. And, of course, it eliminates the need for a runoff, and that's something that's been very positive for our city, both fiscally as well as creating a better outcome in the election process.
State Senator Leland Yee, it's, the question pops up every time. San Francisco 49ers? Yeah. Just go ahead. You got a minute.
You know, I've talked to the Yorks, and I'm just sort of that ego or that vulture, whatever you may be, circling around Santa Clara County. And once we're ready, we're going to swoop down there and take that and bring it back to San Francisco. That's my plan.
Supervisor Michaela Alioto Pier. Public financing, how do you feel about it?
I'm split. I didn't vote for public financing when it came before the board. I am a public finance candidate. And so it is interesting to be in a cycle where when I think the all of us before both our interim mayor, Lee, and public defender, Adachi, got into it, it was interesting because you actually saw how through public financing the field was really opened up. I mean, we're sitting here at a table with a venture capitalist who may not have been here without public financing, not that, you know, but Tony Hall, Bevin, I mean, all of us. It's really quite remarkable. And I think that one of the reasons that we have so many candidates in front of us is because the system was really opened up, there's no question about it, through public financing. I do think that it's a system that needs to be tweaked. And I do think that in tough budget cycles, we do need to bear that in mind. But there's no question that this has provided us with one of the most diverse groups of people running for mayor. It is a democratic process. You have seen and you will continue to see a lot of people with a lot of different ideas, and I think that public financing is one of the reasons that you will see that.
Bevin Dupte, would you support a charter amendment to restrict one-time revenues? Those are the one-time revenues that we always seem to get in around budget time that save everybody's bacon, and setting them aside for capital projects only rather than applying them to ongoing expenses?
I would support the city establishing a policy from a legislative or administrative process. I don't think a charter amendment is the right choice to make given the fluctuations that we can have, and I think it would make budgeting much more difficult. I think in principle having policies, and I know that we have looked at the importance of planning out our fluctuating revenues, which are one-time revenues and property transfer taxes. And I think the fact that we're extending how we pay them, not using them all in one year, is responsible budgeting. But I don't think a charter amendment is the right approach. I think it's too restrictive.
John Avalos, five members of the Board of Supervisors, and I believe you were one of them, proposed a changes in the Care Not Cash program here in San Francisco. If you are elected mayor, how would you change the program?
Well, I actually kept my name on the charter amendment that was going forward. We other supervisors pulled it off. I'm concerned about the Care Not Cash program. I think its success has been that the creation of supportive housing, and you have great organizations like the Community Housing Partnership that have really wonderful models around providing that supportive housing with support. But we also set aside shelter beds in our shelters for Care Not Cash recipients. And their Care Not Cash recipients, they actually have their GHX lowered, but they don't get a unit of housing in an SRO hotel that it provides that supportive housing. They get a bed in a shelter. And some of those beds are not claimed in the shelters. And there are people who are seeking shelter bed access who can't get access because those shelter beds have been reserved for Care Not Cash recipients that aren't claimed. So I actually think that we need to reform that system to assure that the shelter beds are maximized for everyone's use. And I don't believe that a shelter bed is as equivalent as a unit in an SRO hotel that provides supportive housing.
All right. Well, now we come to that time where the candidates make their pitch. And we're going to start with Jeff Adachi and work our way down. So here it is, your pitch time. 1 minute.
Thanks. This is my first debate. I'm learning a lot. These issues, to me, many of them are new. But the reality is you have to look in your leader as to somebody who carries the ball down the field, and that's what I've done. I don't think that there is anything that I have undertaken that I haven't completed. Why? Because if you're talking about the things that need to be fixed in the city, unless we fix it right, it's true, we got to fix things, but we got to fix it right. We got to get it done. I took on a tough issue, pension reform. Why? Because it's like a train wreck. It's like a burning house. If you saw that happening and you saw the impact that it's going to have on the city, you have to do something about it. And I'm the only candidate who put two ballot initiatives to deal with this issue. I've my entire career have been involved in looking out for the little person. And I'm going to continue to do that as mayor. I'm somebody who believes in making sure that everybody has their day in court, and I want to make sure that we defend the public against backroom deals, against making sure that when we reform something, we do the job. That's the difference between the City Hall plan, and if you add backbone to it, Prop C becomes Prop D. That's what we're trying to do here in the city, is fix something so we don't have to go back and fix it again. I appreciate your support, and I hope you'll visit my website at Adachi 2011. Thank you.
Thank you, Phil, for moderating tonight. Thank you to the Alliance for Jobs and Sustainable Growth. It's nice to see so many friends in the audience. To the audience, thank you. To the audience on camera, thank you. And I want to say a special thank you to my 10-year-old son, Nicholas, who is sitting in the back row over there, and my husband, Tom, and my mom. What I do want to say, and it is very hard to say it in the seconds that we are granted, but San Francisco is on the verge of so many great things. But we do have to see a focus on jobs and on job growth in our economy. We talked very little about CPMC, but we cannot stress enough how important those hospital rebuilds are for our city, not just because San Francisco should be the center for medical research and technology and we should make it as competitive as possible, but also because we are a beautiful city that sits very close to two very dangerous fault lines. And we have to remember that emergency management has to be at the forefront of whatever we do, particularly as mayor of this beautiful city. So I'd like to thank you all for listening. Obviously, these debates don't give enough time to express everything that we all have in our minds. My website is michaelaformayor.com. Please visit it. If you have any suggestions for me, please send them. But I am looking forward to this race, and I am very much looking forward to going out and speaking to as many people as I possibly can and gaining as many ideas as we move forward.
John Avalos.
We need a mayor who has true vision to move this city forward. My vision is rooted in the community experience. I'm raising two kids in San Francisco. They're in public school. My wife's a public school teacher. We are like many families who are choosing to stay in San Francisco. And as mayor, I want to make sure that we improve on the assets we have that can keep families here. How can we make our economy more diverse to support green and blue-collar jobs? Not just people who are well-educated and who are in the tech community, but how we can expand other jobs in our port, in our manufacturing industry that's burgeoning. I want to make sure our neighborhoods are livable, that we have affordable housing, good schools, safe parks, and most of all, I want to make sure that we can create a government that can make that happen, a government where the community has access, where they feel their voice is heard, where there is no longer a government that's making decisions in back rooms, but there are people at the table, and we invest in our communities to help people organize together to make the decisions that are going to improve their lives and improve their communities. That's the mayor I want to be. I would love to have your support.
Kevin Dufty.
What I love about San Francisco is that we're a big city and a small town. And to be mayor of San Francisco, you're going to have to be prepared to deal with a pension crisis and to deal with someone you might not have expected to run for mayor. And I think that you've got to recognize that the skill set is about bringing people together and focusing on the people that live in this city. Why is Phil's column so popular? Because people love politics, but they hate politics. They hate the hypocrisy. They hate the way that people talk one way one day and another day the next. And the fact that we seem so self-absorbed with ourselves and power that we're indifferent to the lives that people lead every day. I will be an outcome mayor for San Francisco. I ran the city's complaint department for 5.5 years. I will be a mayor that stands up for the people that work for this city to bring out greatness and not berate them and not point out some flaw from 7 years ago to tarnish somebody's record when they should be enjoying the best day of their life. And so I say to you, maybe I come from a humble background to be mayor, but this city is a great city, and we're going to be even greater. And it's because of those of you out there that care and pay attention, and in the business community and the labor community, and bringing us forward. And that's what we need in a mayor that believes in this city and knows that the greatness lies in its people.
Tony Hall.
Thank you, Phil. You know, folks, the easiest way to get elected to office is to sit here and tell you what you want to hear, make you feel good about it. I'm not built that way. I'm not here to tell you what you want to hear. I'm here to tell you what you need to hear so that we can work together in solving problems that face our city. I'm running for mayor to be a working mayor, not someone unlike the rest of these people up here who's not, I'm not running for higher office. I'm here to serve you. My platform is very simple. It's been distilled out of 35 years of public service. Without it, you do not have a good working government. One, the elimination of systemic corruption, and all of you know what I'm talking about there without going into detail. Two, how do we use the local government to increase jobs? And there's about 6 ways to do it. I won't go into it. Budgetary and fiscal responsibility, administrative accountability, safe and clean streets, very essential. And lastly, an honest, open, transparent government that serves people first and not politics. Simple.
David Chu.
Thank you, Phil. I want to thank all of you for taking part in this incredibly important conversation about who we're going to be in the second decade of the 21st century. Like hundreds of thousands of San Franciscans, I moved here for the reason the whole world loves our city, our diversity, our innovation, our commitment to social justice. I've been blessed to have a career as a criminal prosecutor, as a civil rights attorney, as a founder of a technology company, and for the past 3 years as the president of your Board of Supervisors. I'm running for mayor because we need a new generation of leadership that has a record of getting things done and a vision for the future. Over the past 3 years, I've been honored to work with most of the folks here at the table and many of you to create jobs, to create housing, to really move forward our city. And as your next mayor, my top priorities will be to build a 21st century economy, 21st century schools, and a world-class transportation system. I look forward to working with you in the coming years, and I promise you that as mayor, I will always make independent judgments, not based on ideology and not based on what I'm told by a powerful few. I hope to earn your trust, your confidence, and your first, second, or third vote. Thank you.
Dennis Herrera.
First, I want to thank the Alliance for allowing us to have this very important conversation. And as I've been saying from neighborhoods from Pacific Heights to Potrero, I think that this is a seminal election. I think it's the most important mayor's race we've had in 20 years and the most important race we're going to have for the next 20 because of the challenges and opportunities that San Francisco has at its feet, especially when you can consider that a federal and state government that is shifting more and more responsibilities off its balance sheet is going to leave those responsibilities to us at the local level, demonstrating that we can create economic opportunity and also have a government that works to satisfy people's basic needs. The challenges that we face and the choices we make are not just going to impact the next 4 or 8 years. They're going to determine what sort of San Francisco we have 50 or 75 years from now. And for 10 years as your city attorney, I've used the power of the law, a nationally recognized law office, to make a difference in people's lives each and every day, to provide opportunity and demand accountability. And that's the kind of leadership I want to bring to the mayor's office come November 8th. Thanks very much.
Ed Lee.
Thank you. I, too, want to express my thanks to the Alliance. You know, it's been a wonderful time these 7 months. It's also been reflective of very, very hard work with the Board of Supervisors, with neighborhood leaders, with community-based agencies, whether it was to settle the budget deficit of $380 million, finding a new police chief that resonated with people on community policing and making sure that people believe in our leadership in the city to keep the city safe. Whether it was creating and starting America's Cup and making sure that was on the ground, or whether it was working with the supervisors again to make sure that not only did we save Twitter and Zynga, but we created a new atmosphere at City Hall so that dialogue could be civil and that we can get things done. That's what I've been about for 7 months. And I'll tell you what the most thing that I'm most proud of is the way we did the pension reform. You know, it's a huge task, as some of the representatives here have articulated. And it was important for us to pass a consensus, unified approach to pension reform. And I want to tell you that it's been my pleasure to work with labor leaders,
okay,
business leaders, community leaders to get that job done because it's so important to the future of the city. We did it the San Francisco way. We got everybody together,
okay,
to get that consensus. We did not do it the Wisconsin way. And that will always be strongly reflected in,
okay,
the way we do business here.
Sorry, you're way over. And we want to give everybody a shot here, okay?
Love the enthusiasm, though. It's good. Thank you. I am not a City Hall insider. I'm an entrepreneur and educator. I have a proven track record of creating jobs and bringing innovative solutions to our public schools by rolling up my sleeves and collaborating with entrepreneurial ideas and helping them scale. I also know how to balance a budget without a safety net, and while we can tout our ability to manage the budget deficit, that's not a sustainable solution. We can't shrink our way to success. And the challenges we face didn't happen by accident. They're the result of a series of decisions that have been made within our city government. And I have talked to thousands of residents at muni stops, at people's doors, in merchant corridors, and I keep hearing we need a new solution to our long-term systemic challenges. And just rearranging the chairs at City Hall is not going to get us there. We have to embrace our spirit of innovation and entrepreneurship. We have to figure out how to improve services to the community and spend less money. I look forward to bringing that leadership to City Hall. I look forward to having your vote. JoinJoanna.com. Thank you.
Mr. Ting.
Thank you again to the Lions for putting together this very important forum. I think it's appropriate that we're here tonight at UCSF, a center of innovation where we've been able to attract businesses from around the world to come here to develop cutting-edge life sciences technology that will eventually help us maintain our health, help us grow our economy, and really help San Francisco grow into another great city. At the same time, we don't demand the same of our government. We don't say that our government is the center of innovation or that we are as efficient as we could be. And I think it's so important that we demand of our city what our residents demand of everybody else here. We have a world-class city with world-class people. Some of the brightest folks in our country are here. And we need to make sure that we are utilizing their knowledge, their thoughts, their feedback to make our government even better than it is today. Because with fewer and fewer resources, we are going to have to do more with less. We are going to have to be more efficient. And I know that we've just struck the surface of tonight's conversation, so I would love to invite you to our town hall next Tuesday night to talk about Muni. We're going to be in Golden Gate Park. We're going to dedicate an hour and a half to Muni because I think it's so important that we make sure that we have the best transit system, not a good transit system, not an adequate one, but the best transit system in the country, that we welcome all of you to give us your feedback, not on how to criticize Muni, but how to make it better. So please join us in Golden Gate Park next Tuesday night. Thank you.
Senator Yu.
Thank you very much, Phil, and to my colleagues and to all of you and to the Alliance. Thank you for putting this particular event on tonight. I came here when I was 3 years old. I lived in a single-room apartment in Chinatown with my mother, with my sister, and myself. We had a shared bathroom. We had a shared kitchen. And that is how I started to grow. And with that, because of the good graces of San Francisco, I was able to get educated, raise a family, and establish myself here as my city, San Francisco. I went to the public schools here. All of my children went to the public schools. My siblings are here. My wife and my children are all here. Our friends and relatives are here. This is my city. And what I see, unfortunately, is that the shiny city that I once knew is no longer there. there are multi-million, multi-billion dollar businesses that are just a stone throw away from us. I, as a senator, represent San Mateo. Genentech is in San Mateo. Gilead Science is in San Mateo. Amgen is in San Mateo. And why are they in San Mateo? Because they somehow don't believe that San Francisco is going to be kind to them, even though the reason why they're in San Mateo County is because of UC San Francisco. And so part of my agenda, part of my interest, is that we've got to get that shiny San Francisco back, that future back.
Thank you.
And part of that is how do we then generate those jobs from the biotech, medical devices, recombinant DNA, other kinds of activities
Senator,
such as
we
that.
We got to go.
And so that's what I'm going to do.
We got a hard
working
out.
With all of you. We're going to make this happen once again for all of us here in San Francisco. Thank you.
You know, it's not easy for anybody to get up here and run for mayor. It takes a lot of time, it takes a lot of effort, and it takes a thick skin. And I will thank all these candidates, wealth of talent. Can we give them a hand for this? Thanks.